Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Our special guest is Lance Martin. Lance has been in the real estate business for over 25 years as a broker owner of Coldwell Banker Town and Country Real Estate, which serves the Inland Empire in various locations. Lance is an expert in residential REO foreclosure sales, property management, and running multiple locations. So, Lance, glad you're here.
Well, thank you, Bruce.
You know, that's it's interesting. I've had a real estate license for a long time. I've never done residential sales. There's all kinds of niches that you get into, but that was not one of them.
Yeah, well, that's been our niche, other in addition to the property management. But the residential sales has been at least 70% of our business, and probably the other 30% being the property management for the last almost 30 years. If you did the 25-year introductory, it's almost pushing
over
30 years now.
That's why I said over. I knew it was more.
That's right.
Well, what was the year you got into it then?
It was 1987.
Okay, so, yeah. And I'm kind of a big believer is when you get into a market, 87 was really getting exciting and exploded the next 2 years. And it's interesting that you became an REO agent despite that, because it would be so easy to cloud your brain with, oh, real estate just does all good stuff, you know, and how you positioned yourself to be an REO agent in the 90s. That's a good trick, because normally people don't do that.
Yeah, but well, you got to remember, when I got into the business in 87, I was 19 years old.
Okay.
So I had no idea what I was getting into, other than family. My folks were in the business. My grandparents were in the business. But I don't know that I paid a lot of attention to it when I was that young.
Right.
So in 87, you know, and it was a hot couple of years, and we immediately came out to the... I did 1 year of sales out in the Cerritos area. I'm kind of a Lakewood, Long Beach, you know, native. And then when we came out to the Inland Empire in the Moreno Valley, yeah, you're right. That 88 and 89 and even probably the 1990, it was hot.
Right.
But I didn't know any different. It was oh, well, this is kind of easy. You'd list a house and you'd sell it.
Yeah, now, and then they'd buy another one if you sold their house, that type
yep.
of thing. Now, the 90s downturn unfolded much more gradually than this latest one.
Absolutely.
So did you make a transition to being an REO agent just because it looked like that was going to be an obvious next niche?
No. I wish I could say it was that thoughtful. The plan was, and it was so much different in the 90s, even though it felt bad.
Yeah.
As far as, I mean, it felt bad from, say, 92, 93, certainly by 94, 95, we were in the midst of it.
Yeah.
And then through 97, 98. But actually, to be honest with you, I got into the REO side completely by accident. There was a colleague of ours, and you probably know or remember Tom Hartig.
Sure.
Tom called me one day and said, Lance, coming over to my office, I have an opportunity for you to work with Fannie Mae. And I said, great, Tom. At the time, I think now I was 22 or 23. And I said, great, I'll be right there. And I remember this vividly. I literally stopped after I hung up the phone. I said, I have no idea what Tom just said. So I called him back and said, Tom, I have no idea what you just said. I'd heard of Fannie Mae because it was on the test or something like that for taking your real estate exam. And I said, what did you just ask me? He says, come on over, I'll explain it to you. And so back then, Fannie Mae had a policy which you could literally have no more than 25 REOs. In the city you were in.
Okay.
Tom, I think, had 25. And the conversation with the REO rep at the time was, hey, Tom, who would you recommend? And Tom called me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got in.
Okay.
And it was no master plan. It was, frankly, I guess my relationship with Tom and probably nothing else. Now, of course, we ran that cycle in the 90s and much, again, it felt bad at the time, but nothing like what we started to see in 2006.
Yeah.
That was more premeditated on my part. I started in 2005 realizing that things were trouble. And then is when I went back to my contacts at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Countrywide, and all of the bank. Countrywide was still in existence at the time, and because I was doing business with them later on in the late 90s. And then I started knocking on those doors and saying, hey, I think, you know, you might need me. And of course, they all looked at me like I was nuts.
Right.
And then about a year later, they started phones started ringing, and the banks were on the other end.
Is that a good run for you as far as financially when that happens? I know it's got to be crazy busy.
It's crazy busy, and financially it's good as well. But it's not quite what you might think from the outside looking in, because running these REO teams and these accounts is very expensive. It takes a team. One agent cannot do it.
And it got a lot different from the 90s to 2000s, didn't it?
Yep. Well, the commissions are lower, and the responsibilities are huge. I mean, you're paying utility bills and rehab bills, and there's deadlines, and if you miss them, you don't get reimbursed. And quite honestly, in both cycles, but specifically, let's talk about the most recent cycle, the 06 to, let's call it the 2010, 2011 mm-hmm. cycle. I mean, we were selling houses for, my average sales price was probably less than 120.
Right.
I mean, you know, there were a lot of $50,000, $80,000 properties.
Right.
So we did well, certainly not complaining, but it's not as well as you might think.
Was the relationship different with the lender in the 90s than it turned out to be than 2006 to 2010?
Much different. I can remember in the 90s, it was in many ways, I can't believe I'm saying this, especially on the radio, but it was very much like a job. When you worked with the banks in the 90s, the banks were Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And everybody we dealt with was in Texas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, on Friday at 3 o'clock, things were shut down. And there was very little, if any, you know, REO agents or asset managers, for that matter, that were working the weekends. So it was kind of nice. I mean, you did your work during the week and you took care of business. And then in the most recent, that's the 90s.
Okay.
Now in the 2006, you know, cycle and past that, much different. And I realized that very, very early. We had a property that we had submitted some offers on, and I think it was a Sunday afternoon we had submitted, and I'm working weekends anyway and all the rest of that sort of stuff, but it was a Sunday afternoon we had sent a message in to one of our asset managers, and I think it was, you know, 12 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that. And they had sent a reply back to me mm-hmm. on Sunday, which I thought, well, okay, well, someone's working on Sunday. That's interesting. And then about an hour and a half later, I got an email in all caps, second request. And I literally, at that moment in time, I thought to myself, this is a different ball game.
Yeah.
Asset managers were working 7 days a week. They were a lot of them were working from home. They weren't going into the office in traditional bank setting. So they would work on hours that they wanted to work, evenings and weekends, and which meant we were working 24/7. Much different than it was in the 90s.
Did automation supplant relationships?
Completely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we used to literally be able to contact the asset manager, have great, nice conversations with them, and, you know, they in many ways would say, hey, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And that evaporated in the 90s. I mean, the ability to get those type of clients on the phone and have any sort of conversation with them at all was completely replaced by email or the whatever electronic system that they were using. And in some ways it was better, to be honest with you. It in many ways it made things efficient, but it also there was something that got lost, I think, okay. with the ability to pick up the phone and especially on challenging transactions where you had something that needed a conversation. You know, we needed to talk. We just needed 2 minutes to talk. And it just going back and forth in an email just was something was going to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't going to happen. It was going back and forth in emails and then waiting, you know, sometimes days in between.
At the end of the day, I mean, how they handled this pile of problems, you know, stopping foreclosing on homes, basically, you know, this could have been way worse as far as your pile of REOs could have been five times as many.
Or more. Yeah. At least 10 times as many.
It was headed there.
Certainly.
And then they just pulled the plug. Looking back, you know, I had my doubts that was a wise thing to do, let the market do its thing, but I'm not sure now. Looking back, you'd had everything sell for 40 grand or something.
Yeah, I suppose. And I think, and I'm not sure you can clarify yourself since obviously you're in the room, but I think you and I might have had different feelings on this. I was definitely a believer, and a lot of times this was self-serving, or at least it was perceived to be self-serving, but I was definitely a believer of let the market just settle. And if that means we have 5 or 10 times more foreclosures on the market, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously that didn't happen. All the moratoriums and all of the programs and the modifications and all the rest of that sort of stuff came in. I mean, I think we had the first moratorium, I want to say the end of 2008 or early 2009. I don't know if that sounds correct. It's getting fuzzy to me now.
Yeah, because that's the chart that the default chart was zooming,
right.
and the trusty sale chart was declining.
Right.
And you're just like, wait a minute.
Right, right. But I can remember, and again at the time, and again when I would talk, say this publicly, people say, oh yeah, you're just saying that because you just want more foreclosures to sell and you're being very selfish, which I suppose was true. But I also just at the core felt to get this market to correct. And to just, let's just, you know, to be kind of a little vulgar, let's just flush the toilet. Let's just be done with it. But then on the flip side of it, you say, well, wait a minute. That's, you know, is that the best thing to do for the market? No, we need a little thoughtfulness on this. Would we have been selling everything for $40,000? I don't know if it would have been that bad, but heck, I was selling stuff for $40,000.
Right.
That's the flip side of it. A lot of what we were selling was at that bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
But we appear, I suppose, to have kind of turned that corner. But I got to tell you, it's been a long transition from a distressed market to a healthier market.
It's like I remember building a track in 2005. That's 10 years ago. And the last two houses that we had, you know, so in 2006, we had two fallouts that had sold for $280,000 and then they sold at $205,000 within 60 days. And so 9 years later, you know, we're finally thinking we're maybe on the other side of this and headed in a different direction.
Right.
Not so dominated by REOs and short sales, but by a market that's going to be participating by, you know, the normal. You just had your conference, the 2015, you know, like take a peek at 2015, what's going to happen. What was said about 2014? Do you remember that, and how was 2014 different than what we thought?
Well, first of all, thank you for participating in that.
Sure.
I mean, you as always are standby or stand up guy and coming out, and everyone loves to see you, and you give valuable input. I'll tell you. Well, first of all, let me tell you my feeling of 2014. And it's odd because here I am, first quarter, soon to be second quarter of 2015. And I really thought 2014 was going to be the year we kind of turned the corner and things got better. I really felt it, not just because I'm a salesperson and I want to be optimistic. I really felt it. It seemed as though coming off of 2013, that indicators were things could look better in 2014. And I think the consensus generally was 2014 was going to be not a great year, not a record-setting year, but just a good year. And for all intents and purposes, it was just an okay. First quarter of 2014 was atrocious. I mean, the number of sales, basically. I mean, values had gone up, and we still saw some appreciation throughout the year. But as far as unit sales in first quarter of 2014 was god-awful. We started to do better in spring and summer, but an odd thing happened. It was early in summer. It was probably middle of July of 2014. It seemed as though someone had thrown a little wet blanket on the market. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is July.
This is summer, yeah.
What's going on here? And however, August seemed like it. We kind of got a little bit back on track, but never quite got our momentum. And then, of course, we came into, you know, September and October. It was 2014 was okay, but it wasn't the turnaround year that I thought it was going to be. And it was tough. I mean, it was a tough, if you're an average agent out there or a broker owner like myself, you're glad 2014 is behind us. Okay. Mm-hmm. We had a little bit more time, to reflect on the market. Now again, 2015, first quarter of 2015, again, not setting records, but I'm pretty happy with where we are. And when you want to compare it quarter to quarter, Inland Empire and my offices, there's no comparison. I mean, we've literally done twice as much business in the last 3 months, 2015, than we certainly had in the first quarter of 2014. It feels good. So
what's the big change? And because it's interesting, going into 2014, I had a very strong opinion that it would go up in volume, go up in price.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we never had a set of charts starting at the year that didn't occur. So when it didn't occur, I mean, that's the hard part, is sit there and go, okay, well, this is really an anomaly.
Right.
Why did we have the 2014? And we have the same set of charts pretty much going into 2014, and you're saying that's very different. So what do you think is different?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew. But in 2014, I think there may have been... And again, maybe my recollection of events is a little different, and I don't have the charts in front of me, but we had come up on such a huge run-up in property values in 2012 and 13. And a lot of that was driven by investors and hedge funds out there just, you know, paying premiums and all the rest of that sort of stuff. But just a huge run-up in property values, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60%, depending on the locales. And I do think there possibly was a feeling from the consumer that was, oh boy, this is too much too fast. And there had been little, I have recollections of, oh, you know, are we creating another bubble? Oh, you know, are things going to start to, you know, slow back down? Are we going to see a pullback in property values? So maybe it was just a confidence level of the consumer saying, you know, let's just be patient. You know, a lot of these people have been out of the market for a while anyway. I don't know the difference other than, I mean, interest rates are still at a lifetime low, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, you talk about that on every speech. I mean, where are you going to get an interest rate in our lifetime sub 4%? And we're still sub 4%.
Right.
You know, Janet Yellen was supposed to come out, what, 2-3 weeks ago, and we were going to get the first hint of a Fed funds increase. And I think the day of, somebody said, no, let's not do that. So I don't know, but there does seem to be some renewed confidence in the market. And this isn't scientific, and I don't think you have a chart for this. Maybe you might want to add this into your presentation. But the number of people interested in getting into the real estate business right now is off the charts.
Okay.
I get the list from the Department of Real Estate every Monday. They send out a list of who's interested in getting, who's applying to take their state exam. And that number is double what it was a year ago. I'd need to go back and take a look or have DRE verify, well, what was the number 2 or 3 years ago? But I can tell you it's off the chart, the number of people that are looking to get in this business right now.
So, I mean, you had a big, obviously a big decline when things crashed, but now this is a normal, that chart grows during good times. So apparently people are thinking that's a good way to make a living.
Right. Well, that's the point. I think there's a level of confidence in the marketplace. Which, from your, I'm just talking your average person who's maybe coming off of, you know, maybe they're retiring from a fire department or they're, you know, they're looking for a second career. Whereas a few years ago, the thought of them, you know, oh, geez, I think I'll get my real estate license. I mean, that just wasn't in the cards because the news and the attitude towards real estate was just so downtrodden. Well, that's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got new people lining up in our office almost daily interviewing to come work in our company.
How many agents do you have?
We have just right around 250. It's fluctuating, but we've been growing.
That's a lot of agents.
Yeah.
And how many locations?
5 locations, which, by the way, you mentioned earlier, Coble Banker, Pioneer Real Estate. We dropped the Pioneer Real Estate about a year and a half ago.
Sorry.
That's okay. We're Coble Banker Town and Country, Claremont, Covina, Redlands, Moreno Valley, and Santa Ana.
I saw that boldly printed on your truck.
Yes. Yes, you could have missed that on that monster truck in the parking lot out there. But we were Pioneer Real Estate for 100 years. But when we started to acquire the other locations, we had some identity crisis. We had, you know, 5 different offices with 3 different names. So we put them in a hat, pulled out Town and Country, and that's where we ended up.
Okay. Who's a typical buyer that you're seeing in the marketplace?
Right now there is a fair amount of first time buyers coming in. The lower end entry level market still seems to be the predominant, no matter which office I'm picking. You know, that entry level home in that particular market is definitely the meat and potatoes. Not as many investors anymore. You know, we still have them out there. We do a lot of property management. So my investor experience may be a little bit skewed because we manage 1,000 rentals. There's hundreds and hundreds of property owners that are in the investment business. So them calling me to buy another rental or them calling me to sell a rental, I may have a little bit deeper relationship with some investors than most. Having said that, we're down sub 10% of the market for investors. But we have sold more million-dollar plus properties in the last 3 months than we have in the prior 5 years. You know, and again, it's hard, it's all relative, but, you know, I think we've got 6 million dollar properties in escrow right now. Closed one yesterday and a couple, you know, over $2 million. Most of these are in my Claremont market or what have you. And we just didn't see that. Got one in Redlands. I think we're closing tomorrow for $1.3 million. That was unheard of a year or two ago.
So it's not just the entry level, obviously, it's just across the board. Are these people now, you have move-up buyers that have made most of their equity since they bought, or are they long-time owners, that type of thing?
I think a little bit of both.
Okay.
I think a little bit of both. And these million-dollar transactions, these are financed deals. I mean, these are these are, you know, these are not people with had money pulling out of the stock market to buy a house. These are finance transactions. And again, you have the move up. Another part of the market that I know in various speeches in years past, I've heard you talk about is, you know, we're missing a part of the market.
Right.
Part of that market is that, hey, I just sold my house. I'm going to buy another one to replace it. You know, so many of those people, of course, lost their homes to foreclosure. Okay, well, those people did not go out and buy another house immediately, of course. They've been renting. Now we're seeing a good, healthy mix of people selling their house and going out and buying something else. I mean, we've got agents prospecting every day, and I'm telling them to go call people that bought a house in 2011, 12, and 13.
Yeah.
And saying, hey, we know you just bought a few years ago, but in case you haven't noticed, you made a little bit of money. Did you, what you bought 2-3 years ago, is that really what you wanted? Maybe there's an opportunity to go still take advantage of these interest rates, pull out a little bit of equity, not pull out of equity, you know, take out what you got and go buy that little bit bigger house or that little bit better location that you were looking for.
What's interesting, in the event that you came to and you had to leave early.
Yes.
That was the one thing that there was a niche that I found, which was interesting. I have this, I have Moreno Valley house that's for sale right now. Well, it's actually pending, going to close next week. I bought it for $60,000. It's pending for $225,000.
Okay.
That was in the crosshairs of where all the activity was. That was the 1,300 square foot house in Moreno Valley, and not such a great area, but it got bombarded with interest because it made sense on a monthly basis.
Right.
Okay. So that house went up to whatever,
right.
200,
right.
A little under $200 a foot.
Yeah. What, a 300% increase in since you bought it or
yeah,
something
more
like
than that?
Yeah, 350% increase, 400%, my God.
Well, what was interesting about that is I was looking for what to do with it. So I'm going to exchange it. But oddly enough, just a short distance away, there's a market that's still $75 a foot for a home that's 30 years newer.
Right.
And that was when we started talking about in this report about stimulus. So undue stimulus is exactly what happened to my $60,000 purchase. It got exploded in value because of undue stimulus of investors and all of that. Reverse stimulus happened to the other inventory because all the foreclosures, a great majority of foreclosures in Riverside County were built in 04 to 06.
Yes.
So you had all this yep. pile of inventory, and what were the size of these homes?
Big.
3,000 square
Big.
Feet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Many of the mansions. Yeah.
Right. So you literally could go from a 1,200 or 1,300 square foot house in Moreno Valley, pay closing cost, and walk over and buy a 3,000 square foot house 20 minutes away.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah.
Now, so that's what's interesting. There are pockets of opportunity. You know, if I was in the real estate business, those are the people I would be talking to and go, well, you know, a lot of people do that. They'll drive a little further to own something that's really cool.
Yep. Agreed.
So, last minute and a half. Why are people being told no by a lender? Is there...
Well, I think the financing, I've been saying for a while now, and hopefully I can squeeze this into the period we got to wrap up here.
We can continue to.
But I think the financing in many ways has gotten easier.
Okay.
And obviously the guidelines with Dodd-Frank have crammed down the, you know, square pegs and round holes aren't really working so much anymore. But when I say it's easier, if I have a buyer and I go to the lender and I'm truthful with them and I say, this is what I've gotten, this is my income, this is my job. Well, the lender plugs it into the spreadsheet and says, okay, well, great, you should be able to buy a house. So we're not seeing as many escrows fall out, and we're not seeing as many extensions because that's my easier analogy is if you tell us the right information, we're going to plug it in and we're going to be able to get it done. But I think people today are being told no for the same reason they were being told no before, is maybe their credit's still a little bit bruised, their income's not exactly what it needs to be, they've got a little bit too much debt, you know, maybe they've got the credit card or went out and bought the car that they maybe shouldn't have bought. But I'm not unhappy with the state of the availability of financing right now. I suppose it would be self-serving for me to say it'd be nice if it was a little looser. But the financing doesn't really seem to be too big of a hurdle with where we are.
Lance, what website do you have that we can go?
www.cb for Coldwell Banker, cbtownandcountry.com.
Okay. And that's a fairly new website, or is that?
Well, it's the same one. It's always being updated, but
yeah,
we've been out there for a while.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll pick it up in the next section.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.